Thank you. Be seated.
Court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Enron versus Spring ISD.
May it please the court, Mr. Barry Bowen will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 12 minutes. Mr. Bowen.
I don't think the court allows rebuttal time to exceed the principal opening time.
10 and 10.
Okay.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, Mr. Mott. This case involves whether a statute establishing a method for ascertaining the value of taxable business inventory, which gives the owners of taxable inventories an opportunity to elect an alternate date, September 1 of the preceding year, to that date, January 1, which is otherwise generally provided by Texas Tax Code Section 2301, in which to have their inventory valued, violates various mandates and prohibitions of the Texas Constitution. The three constitutional infirmities alleged are that the statute violates the mandate of Article 8, Section 1A, that taxation shall be equal and uniform, that it violates the mandate of Article 8, Section 1B, that property shall be taxed in proportion to its value, and that it violates a prohibition against exemption, which could be found in Article 8, Section 2, or Article 8, Section 1D2, variously. The statute is one of a number of special valuation statutes found in Chapter 23 of the Tax Code, and we've seen some activity in this area in the last few years in which the legislature is trying to grope with trying to protect, which is obviously a very complicated system. But these recent amendments, I think, are important for looking at the analysis of this case. There's been a new statute, Section 2312 A and B, which deals with motor vehicles, provides a complicated system of escrow accounts and taxation on transactions, which have been averaged over the years. It's really an averaging statute. We have Section 23175, which is a provision dealing with the taxation or valuation, excuse me, of oil and gas in place, which provides for looking at the average prices over the preceding 12 months. And then we have various recapture provisions, which land use changes that were under the agricultural open use provision. All of these provisions depart from the old, otherwise applicable January 1 date. I want to discuss briefly the record below because the respondent has raised some issue about that. And let's talk about the evidence that was adduced in the trial court. First of all, we have to start with Smith v. Davis and the strong presumption in favor of the constitutionality of the legislative action in this case in establishing this alternate date. Then what did the respondent offer? The respondent offered an expert who talked about the fact that owners of business equipment who add equipment in the last quarter of the year could benefit if they were given the opportunity to have their property valued as of September 1. He also offered, the respondent also offered the testimony that building permits had been issued in Harris County in the last quarter of the year, showing that if owners of real property were allowed to choose September 1 of the preceding year, that they could benefit from such an election as well. We didn't offer any positive evidence, but we did elicit testimony from respondents' witnesses. We elicited the testimony that the statute in question clearly was authorized by the nature of the inventory. The fluctuating value of the inventory was admitted freely by the expert for the respondent. Furthermore,
is that important? Does the legislature have to have a reason?
I believe there has to be certainly some reason that would justify taking inventory out from under general property as far as providing a special or different method for ascertaining value.
If they just say, we're the legislature, we can do what we want, and we think in this particular case there ought to be two dates, and that's that, would that, you would say that might be a problem, or not?
Well, again, I just think that, I think that you really have to be able to show that there is some basis in the nature of the business or the problem you're dealing with that justifies a separate treatment from other property.
Under the Texas rational basis test, whatever that may be, does the legislature have to think of that reason and we have to believe that it's rational, or can we, like the U.S. Supreme Court, put our thinking caps on and come up with any reasonable rationale we want to, and that is sufficient to satisfy minimum scrutiny?
I think it's the latter. Clearly, in this case, there was no evidence in the trial court of the legislative purpose. There's no legislative history that anyone was able to find. We don't know what the motivation or the purpose of the legislation was, and any statements respondents may make to that effect, and any statements the Court of Appeals made are clearly pure speculation. So I think that we only have to put on our thinking caps, and I think we've done quite a thorough job of that in this case with respect to the petitioner by pointing out the section of the Natural Resources Code which establishes a public policy in favor of building inventories of natural gas in storage so that they're high in advance of the peak winter demand season.
Your argument boils down to that the legislature can pass special interest tax legislation as long as there's some rational basis for it, and then it satisfies the equal and uniform provision of the Texas Constitution.
Well, Your Honor, when you use the word special interest, it almost carries with it a pejorative connotation. This is not special interest in the sense that it is equally applicable to all. So,
equally applicable to all people who, we're talking about inventory and talking about people who can manipulate, which I guess has a pejorative sense to it as well, but they can adjust the level of their inventory at different times in the year so their tax consequences may vary. And that's the sense in which I use.
Yes, my answer is yes to that as far as we talk about the equal and uniform mandate. That's clearly, in every case dealing with it, clearly deals with rate, equality of assessment at market value at the same level of a proportion of market value. That's what the equal and uniform cases deal with here. I think there's no obligation to extend a scheme for valuation of inventory to real property, nor is there, conversely, an obligation to extend. Now we have a scheme that values oil and gas in place on averages. There's no obligation to extend that scheme to homeowners who could prove that maybe they would be benefited if they could value their homes on an average basis of the prices in effect in the preceding year rather than on a particular tax date.
So the legislature can make a distinction between inventory owners and non-inventory owners, and they can also make a distinction between different types of inventory owners, as long as there's a rational basis to do so.
I see no reason why they can't. Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's true.
And you've identified one thing in the gas area about one rational basis. Can you sort of tick those off for us, what the rational basis might be upon which this legislation could be supported?
Well, certainly I think you could support the picking of this alternative date, number one, on the basis that any date, of course, is arbitrary and falls more beneficially or more detrimentally on a number of taxpayers. I think giving a second alternate date to all taxpayers is a rational response to a system in which one arbitrary date is inherently unfair. If you gave four, that would be fairer still. An averaging system would be a fair way to do it, but clearly giving an alternate date creates more fairness and uniformity throughout the system.
But, I mean, in equal protection, though, what you've got to rationalize is the distinction.
and the distinction is between giving some people one day and other groups of people 2 days. That's what there has to be an explanation for.
Right.
Not that the person who gets the 2 days has gotten a deal that's fair from the state.
Well, the rationalization, you know, has, with regard to inventory, has been readily accepted by every court that's ever looked at it, and that is that inventories tend to fluctuate rapidly in value. They tend to be cyclical, repetitive, and therefore, if one day is hit with inventory, it's going to fall harder on somebody who deals in commodity with a high price on January 1 than it does with someone who has low inventories or faces low prices on each and every January 1. That's certainly the rational basis behind that. I mentioned the gas situation simply because it applied to us. There could be administrative reasons for picking a September 1 date. There are certainly probably many other taxpayers, many other types of inventory who would be unfairly treated by a January 1 date, or who the legislature may want to encourage the building of inventories in the fall months.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Mott will present argument to the respondent.
May it please the court, Robert Mott, Mr. Bowen, Mr. Udall. I'm here to represent Spring Independent School District, responded in this court appellant below, and I would pose the question to the court that was posed to the Court of Appeals, and that what is the purpose of any statute affecting the valuation of property for property taxation purposes? We believe that that purpose is dictated by the Constitution itself, and specifically by the provisions that we have cited to this court concerning this matter. In Article 8, Section 1, the twofold purpose is equality and uniformity of taxation, and that all real and tangible personal property shall be taxed in proportion to its value as it may be ascertained as provided by law. Now, taxation in proportion to market value means the same proportion of market value, and I think that that is a fundamental tenet of the jurisprudence of this state. That's why we have all the racial discrimination cases that we've cited to this court over the years, and it is our contention that this particular statute, by giving an option to one select group of taxpayers for which there is no rational distinction violates that particular clause of the Constitution, or those two clauses of the Constitution in particular, and therefore renders this statute unconstitutional as a violation of equality and uniformity of taxation in proportion to market value.
Why, if the nature of your business is such that you have more inventory on hand on one date than on another, whereas that's not true of someone else's business, isn't it rational for the legislature to make it, to give you an option, set another date?
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor. It is rational for the legislature to consider perhaps some other mechanism of looking at it, as virtually all the cases in other states cite to an averaging method to deal with inventory valuation. Now, if there is an approach that should be constitutional applied to inventory, it should be averaging, which takes out the fluctuations.
So the legislature has a single choice when it comes to inventory. It has no options.
We believe that when you look at the choice, Your Honor, that they're given here, the defect we find here is precisely as Chief Justice Phillips mentioned before. They've given an option only to a narrow group of property owners. Only those property owners effectively who benefit by the September 1 valuation are given a real and meaningful option here. And it's the substance of that rule, I think, that causes the inequality that we have challenged and that the Court of Appeals found fault with.
Don't homeowners close before the end of the year so that the taxes have, there's a different impact on property taxes? Don't homeowners have a choice of owning real estate on January 1 or not owning real estate on January 1?
They have that choice. Every property owner involved in a transaction does, but that.
So, and don't all these commercial enterprises have inventory sales at the end of December so that they reduce their inventory so that they have less taxes on January 1? Isn't that an option available to taxpayers?
Yes, Your Honor, but there's a difference, I believe. Couldn't
the legislature identify certain people who, in order to meet public needs, have to increase their inventory for public service, then get a benefit of having a different date for that taxation so they could get the same benefit that other taxpayers have, which is to re- have reduced their inventory prior to the taxing date?
Your Honor, that's a possibility, but in fact, the statute doesn't do that. In fact, what this statute does, and every property owner has an opportunity to adjust their inventory or their property holdings with respect to valuation date, though frankly in real property transaction it makes no difference because virtually all taxes are prorated and the liability will be prorated. However, in terms of the way this sort of thing is handled under this statute, the opportunity given to inventory owners and only those that will benefit by September 1 valuation is an election that does not necessarily have to do with managing their business so as to minimize their taxation. Regardless of the management of their business, if the cyclical nature of their business is such that they reach a lower point on September 1 or in fact the lowest point on September 1 in particular, then they're given a meaningful option. That is the defect that we find in the statute and the defect that the Court of Appeals found in the statute. It is not necessary to arrange your affairs to take advantage of this when the legislature passes a statute for you and says, we're going to go in and we're going to identify that this is a statute that favors this particular group, which is what we believe they did here. And in so doing, they set aside a date that is favorable to a particular group. As was suggested by earlier questioning, one of the things that can occur, and I think certainly will, is by subclassifying and getting much smaller groups, anyone that can effectively go to the legislature and say, look, this is the valuation date we want, can minimize their property tax burden to the detriment of all other property owners.
But you can do that constitutionally, can't you, as long as there's a rational basis to support the legislature's decision?
If there is a rational basis, yes, sir.
And here, why isn't the Enron's contention is that allowing this alternative date will allow the building of inventories of gas, I guess, during the winter season when there's greater consumer demand. Why isn't that a rational basis? Well,
I researched the basis upon which that statement was made, Your Honor, and I did not find any indication that that was legislative policy at all. Legislative provision.
So it didn't necessarily occur to the legislature?
Well, no, sir. The basis for that argument was that the legislature has recognized the building of inventories to be a positive thing, and I don't believe that they've done so. They've simply indicated that the use of salt domes is a good thing for public policy, which is very different than saying we're going to promote the building of inventories for winter demand or what have you.
Where do you store it if you don't put it in a salt dome?
There are other mechanisms, but that's one of the most common, certainly, Your Honor.
You're not saying that by picking a September 1 date that Enron receives a different tax rate than on January 1, or are you?
Yes, sir. We are.
They have a different tax, so
well, a different
what is being charged against their inventory, the amount that's being charged against their inventory is a different amount than would be charged against their inventory if it was January 1?
Substantially different. And not rate in terms of nominal rate of taxation, but rate in terms of the value placed on the property. I think the evidence below demonstrates
now,
a difference.
What do you tax Enron on? Is it the amount of gas they have?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're not, there's no difference in the value, there's just a difference in the quantity.
No, sir. There's also a bit difference in the value. One of the things that occurs in the taxation of these types of goods is that you have to have a starting rate that will be the rate that influences the bulk of the sales out of the inventory. And the evidence below showed that there was a very substantial difference between the price of natural gas as of January 1 and the price of natural gas as September 1. This was documented and that was not disputed. So the statute essentially puts forward two things. One, an opportunity to choose a date which lowers the quantity, or in many cases can eliminate the quantity for which the property owner is assessed. And secondly, the rate may also be seriously affected because there is fluctuation to some extent in the price of various goods on a seasonal basis. And so what was done here is something to put those who benefit most by September 1 on a different footing than other property owners with respect to the valuation of the property, both in pricing and in quantity. And that's where we argue that there is a serious defect in the statute.
That phenomenon about the fluctuation in pricing affect any other personal real property owners other than those who own inventory?
Yes, the perfect example probably of that is the area in which the courts have made most of the law regarding valuation dates in the state of Texas, Your Honor, and that is in the area of mineral valuation. Minerals prices probably fluctuate more than any other type of product that you encounter in the property tax field, and the variation is enormous. And so you do see that kind of variation occurring. Now, the mineral statute that Mr. Bowen referred to, in order to even that out, looks to and says essentially we're going to assume that the January 1 price is reasonably estimated by an average of the preceding years, although that statute goes further and says you may look beyond that and see if that is indeed a stable rate. What this statute does is that basically if you benefit by this election, you can take it, cut your price, cut your quantity, and be taxed on a different basis than other property owners. I would note also, as the Court of Appeals noted, that in the case below, this property owner possessed gas in the Bammel Reservoir that was taxed in a September 1 value with different pricing and different quantities, while the others, for whatever business reasons of their own, chose not to make the election. Now, the result of that, I think, is a serious concern in terms of the quality and uniformity of taxation. While it is unquestionably true that all of the owners of natural gas in the Mammal Reservoir had the right to make this choice, they did not do so. So what we have is, for the same tax year, identical gas intermingled, taxed at different rates or on a different basis, different values applied in the pricing, different quantities applied or different dates for the determination of quantities, and absolutely no distinction whatsoever between the product that is involved.
Why would it be any less offensive if it were in the reservoir next door?
Perhaps it would not. I simply think the identification of it all intermingles, the same location, same time. There's absolutely no difference between this gas at all, in location, for example, or in any other way. And that's why I think it points out one of the infirmities of this statute in terms of providing a taxation in uniform proportion to market value. Different market values are being used, and it makes, I believe the evidence below shows, a very meaningful difference in the amount of tax liability for this particular property owner, and treats them differently than those identically situated in every respect, including size. One of the key issues here is the importance of what is the distinction upon which the legislature has made this determination. What justifies their decision? What is the rational basis relating back to the differences in inventory that justifies this? And throughout their briefing and their argument, the petitioners in this case have argued very strongly that it is the variability of inventory that justifies this type of distinction. Now, variability of inventory in terms of quantity and price over time could indeed justify the legislature in a carefully drawn statute going to say the values of January 1 is going to be the typical value for an inventory owner, and we're going to estimate that using the prior year's quantities, as has been done in most states and in virtually all of the decisions cited in other states by the Court of Appeals, by the petitioners, and by us as respondents. That is a very different matter. In that case, the distinction made by the legislature is rationally supported by the facts and the characteristics of the property. That's not true here. This is a special interest statute. It was designed specifically to benefit a particular group. It's the type of thing that is in strict derogation of equality and uniformity of taxation as a policy in this state.
What group was it passed to benefit?
The Texas Automobile Dealers Association. And as counsel pointed out, you can't prove that on the record. I make that assertion because, well, their lobbyist told me. I was there when it passed. They made no bones about it.
Obviously, it must inure to the benefit of others, or this case wouldn't be here.
That's correct, Your Honor. It did in the case of Enron.
Does
this particular
it apply to retail sales?
I've seen there were some retail sales plans that were claiming it, but they had just claimed it as a matter of course, thinking it would help them, and then they looked at it and said, there's really not enough at stake here for us to defend this. It really didn't make a big difference for them. But it was passed for the Automobile Dealers Association, apparently didn't work very well because they went back and got a new special statute which taxes them not on the property they own, but on the property they sell. In other words, the property they don't own. And so that a different approach has been taken by that association in approaching this. But the defect in that is that if this court says, okay, we're going to allow the legislature to do this in every circumstance, every single special interest group now has a free shot. They can go in and ask the legislature to give them a special valuation statute whereby the date or appraisal methodology. And very quickly we end up with...
This statute is not for one industry.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, that's another case. What you're just saying might happen. Yes, but what you're saying is if we allow a distinction between inventory owners and non-inventory owners, then a statute that says natural gas producers whose name starts with E can do taxes on this date.
I'm not making myself clear. If you allow a statute which distinguishes between inventory on a basis that is not unique to inventory at all, and that is the difference in valuation dates. There are huge differences that we established at trial for many other classifications of property owners that show that this September 1 date could be just as advantageous for any other category of property. There are any number of other property owners that are similar. Excuse me.
Year in and year out could be just as advantageous, or just on a
more on a typical basis, in a given year, in a given set of circumstances. But for example, things can change very quickly, and this is one of the reasons why valuation dates are so critical to the question of whether or not taxation is being uniformly applied. I mean, in a single day, a house can burn. In the mineral field, which is the area where we see the difference probably most vast in terms of determination of quantity, in a single day, a long-standing producing well without any prediction from anybody can go absolutely cold dead. By the same token, a long-shot lease can produce oil and gas in a level that makes it worth thousands of times the value that would have been estimated for a fairly speculative project.
Would you have the same problem with this statute if they eliminated the January 1 date and just said inventory owners have to do it September 1st?
I think there is far less of a problem with that type. That has been approved in some other circumstances, and I think that if, as long as there is a rational basis for making that distinction and looking to the purpose of the legislation and what it does, and that is it establishes a different date. Is there a basis for that date and any basis that you can establish to back it up? And that's a distinction that's rational. But to give a choice to only a set of inventory owners, and in fact, while this statute is nominally and literally available to all inventory owners, it's not meant for all inventory owners. It's a special interest statute. It's meant for those that benefit by the September 1 date.
But anybody decided that they wanted to do it, they could switch.
They can.
Let me make sure I understood the facts. I'm not sure I correctly caught what you were talking about a while ago. You said there were other owners in the Bammel storage field that paid at a different rate. Did they have the option or not?
Yes, they did, Your Honor. They had the option for business reasons of their own. They chose not to. The essence of that complaint is that if you are supposed to have equal and uniform taxation in proportion to value, that's not it. And that is a very considerable problem. I think the Court of Appeals noted that it created a huge ambiguity as to what market value is supposed to be, and it is certainly not uniform taxation. When you're doing the same property, same location, intermingled and identical, even though both property owners have the choice, there is a very big difference in terms of public policy as to whether or not it's appropriate for that kind of taxation policy to be the law of this state.
September 1 date just uniformly a lower gas price date?
That's my general understanding, is that in terms of pricing, it typically is lower then because you haven't reached winter demand and the price goes up in terms of winter demand. I'm speaking just from personal knowledge, not the record.
Is the price in September higher than the price in May?
That I do not know.
But you don't have any record evidence on the car.
We have no record evidence on that. We do have record evidence that for the year in question, there was a substantial difference in the pricing.
Should the courts decide appropriateness of legislation, or should the legislature decide that?
The court should only decide, Your Honor, of course, the constitutionality of the legislation. And that's why we believe this is properly couched in in the terms of the Texas Constitution. This is the type of legislation that we believe that the Texas Constitutions here were drafted to prevent. We always had an equality and uniformity provision in our Constitution. However, it was after the incredible abuse by the legislature during the Reconstruction era that much sterner language was placed in the Constitution with defining equality and uniformity in terms of being in proportion to market value, so as to prevent the kind of special interest abuse that this statute represents. That is precisely why that language was placed in the Constitution, at least according to the research that I've been able to do, and it's the kind of thing that I think is a very serious issue when this type of legislation permits this options for only a select few. I would note also, very importantly, and there is some record evidence that helps establish this point, this particular statute gives property owners the opportunity to escape taxation altogether. By using the devices they have available, Enron could have done it. To their credit, they did not. But it is very clear that you can take property in one subsidiary corporation, elect September 1, time when it holds that property, without moving the property, without changing its relationship to the community, get the police protection or all the services provided by local government, then switch it to another corporation which elects January 1. We have cases exactly like that in the Panhandle where that's going on. In that case, property owners who have the right and all the benefits and opportunities of local government pay absolutely nothing on their inventory.
You mentioned one other case. Have a number of taxing districts challenged this statute? Will this set policy in a lot of other cases, or are you spring an aberration?
No, sir. There are cases at various states. There is one in Beaumont, I believe, on its way to the Court of Appeals. There is a case in Amarillo awaiting trial that involves the absolute absence of any basis for taxation.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Mark Udoff will present the rebuttal.
Your Honor, I think much of the Court's questioning has illuminated why it probably is the case that the Court should not listen to the sirens of the rational basis test here. There are thousands of tax laws, and we pay our income tax on April 15th, and in this case it's January 1st, is the general tax date. Some jurisdictions it's December 31st. Yes, it is true you have to have a rational basis, but it is also true that some dates have to be chosen. And before embarking on establishing a standard of review, and before getting into the types of circumstances here, one should think carefully about those other cases. Now, let me make a couple of points. One thing that has not been mentioned is that the choice has to be made prior to August 1st under this statute. And if you look at the facts of this case, the price of natural gas went from $1.57 a thousand cubic feet to $1.76 on January 1st. In other words, it's not a backwards choice where you look at what the market had done. There are risks here. Now, it may be, for all I know, the last X number of years, there's more of a shortage of natural gas, more demand for natural gas, and the winter month prices are higher. But eventually markets catch on to things like that. So most of the differential here is not a variation in quantity. If you look at the figures, it's only about 4%. It's a variation between about 85 billion cubic feet and 88 billion. So not much gas has moved around here. The quantity is roughly the same. It's the change in the market price over those months. And the election had to be made prior to August 1st. That is months before one could know what that differential would be. The second thing is this is not an exemption case, which has been asserted in the Court of Appeals. This is, in my judgment, a valuation case, which is consistent with Hardin versus Central American Life Insurance, this Court's decision in the Republic Insurance Company, and footnote 4 in Justice Hightower's fine opinion in Gifford Hill versus Wise County Appraisal. Now, conceptually, we can argue about this to the cows come home, But the question is value. And it is true that when you're valued on January 1st in real property and you add a room on June 30th, that you could conceptually say something has been exempted. But the reality, which this court has recognized many times, that it's really a valuation problem. Can you value each day of the year? Do you average? When do you look? How many dates are there? And from that standpoint, we submit this is a rational way to go about this process of valuation. A third thing, which is very important, is there really is no case law support for this position. This court, if it were so inclined, the states of Washington, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Oregon, no Supreme Court of any jurisdiction that I'm aware of has accepted the argument that to have different assessment dates, either for different classes of property or even within the same class, whether it's at the behest of the assessor, which is most of the case, or as in Michigan, at the behest of the taxpayer, no court has ever held this type of approach to be unconstitutional. All the cases that are cited by the respondent are different cases. They generally are cases where, like the Allegheny-Pittsburgh coal case in the United States Supreme Court in 1989, they're generally cases where the local assessor is not following state law. And if you look at these cases, there are cases where they do, in fact, create a different mode of valuing property for one taxpayer or sometimes for a group of taxpayers, but there is no authority of state law to make any sort of differential. In almost all the cases, Atlantic Richfield versus Warren, decided by the Beaumont Court of Appeals in 1970, had one set of values if your improvements were built in 1962 or before, and another set of values if it were built after 1962, in which case they were kept current. These are all situations in which there was very explicit type of discrimination within districts not authorized by any sort of state statute. The other thing you have to ask in this case, I think, is how fact-specific is this court going to have to be in the orderly judicial review of these statutes? The Spring ISD found a taxpayer whose appraisal would have been higher on January 1st. But what if the value of natural gas had gone down in that period? Is it still unconstitutional? Maybe it only happens once in 10 years, but is it unconstitutional? Should the result vary based upon those facts? Is it fair to look at Motorola and Enron and not to look at thousands of other taxpayers? I would submit if you're going to play this game of taking what is essentially a de facto type of impact, that is all that's specified as the date, one should look at the impact on all taxpayers across the state to determine what its true impact is. If your problem is, your concern that it's discriminatory, with special interest legislation or whatever, why just allow the district to pick and choose? The fact of this case is that this invites the court to engage in a very dangerous type of motivational analysis. Judge Brown below, he didn't like this law because he thought of it as special interest legislation. But how does he know that? And where has respondent proved that? And if it is at the behest of industry, why can't it still be rational? I view this in some ways as an effort to level the playing field. That is, there are taxpayers who are adversely affected by having a January 1 date. What is improper about the legislature saying, yes, it does hit you rather hard, perhaps we should have alternative dates because there are different businesses with different inventory and different peak seasons in terms of those businesses. The last thing I'd like to say about this is I think that this is a case where the legislature has exercised its authority to provide for a method of how property should be valued. And I don't think too much should be inferred from a simple date. That is within the legislature's prerogative. And except in a case of the clearest circumstances of legislative arbitrariness, it seems to me that this court should not likely assume that task for itself.
Counsel, we've had some litigation on Article 8, Section 1, and I think our court has had it for the last 100 years. And you cite the other states, but isn't it true that Texas perhaps had more problems preceding its current constitution with unequal taxation than many other jurisdictions.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that is true.
Maybe a little more specific.
I don't know if it's germane to this case, but I think for many years we had doctrines in Texas that made it very difficult for a taxpayer to successfully challenge the administration of a tax in an unequal way, such as the doctrine of having to enjoin the collection of all taxes in the district, and certain sorts of doctrine on standing, and so forth. I don't know if empirically our situation is worse, but I do know that at least up until the reforms in the late 1970s, it was very difficult for a taxpayer, even who had shown a discriminatory pattern, to secure any sort of relief. And I think that has changed.
In light of all that history, though, should our standard of review under Article 8, Section 1 be somewhat higher than either Texas or National Equal Protection Review, or what other states do under equal and uniform taxation?
I think my view, Your Honor, is it should not. I don't know that today's legislature should be blamed for the original sin of lack of uniformity.
I'm not blaming. I'm just talking about whatever the constitutional standard is.
I think there has been a history of inequality and lack of uniformity. Should not have a bearing on that, because I think the record for the last decade or more has been very good, and I don't think the constitutional standard should change. I think I don't treat this as sort of like a school district which is segregated students, and therefore there's a sort of higher level of review when you have measures that have arguably a differential impact.
Well, I'm really not even, I'm not making myself clear. I'm asking if, given the abuses of the 1870s and the language that the people then adopted in response to that, whether that sets up a stricter scrutiny we have to judge tax statutes by than would our general equal protection clause or the tax clauses in other states?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think, first, that's not what your case has established to this point, although this court could establish that. Second, there were plenty of abuses in other states, and in fact, our Constitution is quite similar. One of the things Judge Brown says is that there are all these differences among state constitutions, but actually the uniformity and equality clauses are very similar and have been more or less similarly construed in this area. There's really not that much variety out there, and this is certainly something which is not outside of the sort of mainstream type decisions that legislatures make.
Any other questions? That concludes the argument in the second call. The court will take a brief recess before returning for the